Accession number 4582, Reel 2.
Mr. Buckley, Reel 2. I think an incident happened to you at Shaiba on your way up to Baghdad.
Oh, yes, rather, it was an incident, because, as I said, I was born in North Wales, and at a particular time when I lived there, there was a brewery called Wrexham Lager Beer Brewery. They made nothing but lager beer, and they also had a public house that sold nothing but lager beer. Well, anyway, my friend who I enlisted with, Bailey, was with me at the time, and we got nothing to do in the enemy, so we just went out for a casual walk around this old camp. I think it was a previous camp that must have been occupied by the army previously to us being there. Anyway, we were walking around, and just round the camp, and I happened to see a bottle lying on the sand there. I picked it up, looked at it, and the label was Wrexham Lager Beer. I thought that was a marvellous thing, being all those miles away from Wrexham, and I pick a bottle up with Wrexham Lager Beer on it.
When you got to Baghdad, what happened to you then?
Well, we were given squadrons to go to. I was transferred to 30 Squadron, which was at Baghdad West. Now, at Baghdad West, at that particular time, there was 30 Squadron, number 8 Squadron, number 6 Squadron, and 70 Squadron. And number 1 Squadron was at Nadi, and 55 Squadron were at Mosul. But I stayed with 30 Squadron in Baghdad West.
What was your impression of the station at Baghdad West?
Well, it was quite compact. The aerodrome, of course, there wasn't such a thing as grass on the aerodromes. It was all sand. And it seemed very bare, having coming from England, out of all the green fields and everything. It seemed desolate, except for the river. By the river you had all the wonderful palm trees growing, and it was very nice there. The weather, the climate was very hot. But apart from that, I don't know.
What was your accommodation like at Baghdad?
Oh, the accommodation, we were in special huts with low verandas on account of the heat. And we had there was 3 big fans with 4 blades each on them down the centre of the huts we were sleeping in. And it was quite nice there, even in the hot weather. It was nice and cool inside because the buildings were built that way to keep out the heat. But we found that the biggest thing there, the biggest plague there at night time, were sand flies. We were all issued with mosquito nets to keep out the mosquitoes, which were very good, but the sand flies could get through them. And that was the biggest bugbear, was sand flies at night time. So we all decided that to do away, to prevent us from the sand flies, we used to pull the beds up to the heads underneath the fans, all the beds, heads underneath the fans, and sleep that way at night time, because the sand flies cannot fly in the draft. And that's how we used to survive.
Did it work?
It did work, yes.
Did you fall sick whilst you were in Iraq?
Oh, yes, I fell sick, which I think was very unfortunate, because most people who go there suffer from sand fly fever. Now, I didn't suffer from sandfly fever myself, but in the latter part of my service, I contracted amoebic dysentery.
How did you contract that?
I haven't the foggiest idea. It could have been eating a fruit, or could have been water, swimming. When I went swimming, I may have had a mouthful of water. I don't know, but I went sick and I was in hospital over 6 months.
Where was that?
In Baghdad. BSH Hospital, I think they called it, in Baghdad.
What kind of treatment did you get?
Well, it was very drastic treatment. I thought so at the time because I became very, very weak. They used to give us what they call a course of needles, which were 12 needles. I think if I remember rightly, the name was emetine. Injections of emetine. And at night, every night, they gave you a pill and advised you after taking the pill you were to lie perfectly still. Well, I took the first course of needles, which was 12, and I felt very weak at the time. I waited for the results to come back, and they came back positive. So I had to go through another course of 12 needles. I got to the 11th needle, and I was too weak to take the 12th one. I could get a comb to my forehead, but I couldn't pull it through my hair. I was that weak. And on this particular time, there were 7 people died in the ward.
What from?
Same complaint as I had, dysentery. And at that particular time, I was feeling that I should be probably dead before I left there. But it cheered me up when I heard they were going to give us a medical board and send us back to England. I had something to fight for. And I made a vow that I would never be buried out here. So they started feeding us up. And that was a disaster when they first started that. I hadn't had any solid food for weeks. They brought me my first breakfast. 2 thick slices of bread and butter and a hard-boiled egg. And this is the truth. I complained about it. And I asked them if I could have something I fancied. They said yes, and they brought it to me. I ate it, and from then on I picked up strength. But we left Baghdad in the early part of December, and we put on boat to Bombay to come to England. I arrived at Bombay, and they told us that there was no berths booked on the ship, so they sent us to a hospital in Doolally. And it was at Doolally Hospital, still no treatment, only just diet, no medical treatment, until April. And in April, they sent us back to Bombay again, and from Bombay to Karachi to catch a boat for England. And I arrived in England in April 1924.
What type of physical condition were you in when you arrived back in England?
Well, I picked up quite a lot coming back on the boat. The sea voyage, I think, done me good, and I was eating food. But I'd still got this irritation in the intestines from the dysentery. However, when we arrived at Southampton, we were sent to Netley Hospital for the weekend. And on the Monday, I was transferred from Netley Hospital to RAF Hospital at Halton in Buckinghamshire.
What type of treatment did you get there?
Actually, I had all the tests for a week. They give me urine test, stool test, blood test, every test they could think of. And they all turned out negative. which to me didn't seem possible. All that time, having treatment for a complaint, no cure. Yet I get to England without any, all the journey I travelled back from Baghdad, without any medical treatment at all, I get to England and I was negative. So it puzzles me why this happened. And then I did say that, I heard someone say that this germ doesn't live in England. It will lie dormant, but it's not active when you get into a cold climate. I wondered why it kept me in Baghdad so long.
And so, after your treatment at Halton, were you discharged from the RAF then?
No, I was sent back. I was sent home on 3 weeks' leave, I think it was. Fortnight or 3 weeks' leave. Or maybe longer, might be 6 weeks' leave. After leaving Halton, I was sent home for 6 weeks' leave. And then I returned back to the depot at Huxbridge at the end of my leave.
What happened there?
Then I was posted from there to Henlow. No, wait a minute. Was I posted from there to Henlow? Yes, I was posted from there to Henlow. And when I got to Henlow, this was in 1924, and I was going to get married in September 1924. I think, yes, it was 1924. I was getting married in September 1924. And I put in for compassionate posting from Henlow to Kenley. I eventually got back to Kenley in 1924.
This was back with 24 Squadron?
Yes, 24 Squadron was still there then, I believe. I remember, yes, it was still there.
And what work were you doing at Kenley?
I'm just trying to think what I was doing at Kenley. I went back on the switchboard again, I believe, at Kenley.
And how long did you stay there?
I stayed there until I was discharged.
When was that?
September 1925. Oh.
Can we go back to your time in Iraq now? And if I can ask you some more questions about Iraq. You described what conditions were like at Baghdad West. Was the work that you were doing there at Baghdad West the same telephonist work that you'd been doing in the UK?
Yes, actually, when I got to Baghdad, I was put on a telephone exchange again. That was my calling at that time, was telephonist, and I had quite a lot of experience at it. So they put me on the RAF exchange, the little exchange they had at the headquarters. Which was something entirely different than what I was used to, because this was, I should think, this switchboard came out of the Ark, as far as I know, because there was only just a few extensions, but every extension had its own cord. So it was one cord connection. If you made a connection to another subscriber, it would only be one cord. You'd either use the person's cord that was calling and put it into the extension he wanted, or use the one he wanted and put it into his extension. It was just connected with one cord. It was a peculiar idea, but it worked. Normally, it was two cord connections on most of the switchboards in England at that particular time, and doll's eye signals.
What signals?
Doll's eye, what they call a doll's eye. It comes, you know, when a doll, the eye drops when you go to sleep.
The eyelid.
The eyelid, it drops. Well, this was a little white disc shaped of like an eye, and when they take the receiver off, this disc drops and gives you a signal in the exchange. You've got the number on it, or extension number.
And did you do this telephonist work the whole time you were at Baghdad West?
No, no. Most of the time I was at Baghdad West, I'd done that particular job until we were removed from Baghdad West to Hinaidi.
When was that?
I'm not quite sure of the date, but I think it must have been sometime in 1922. And when I was posted to Hinaidi, I lost that job because there was no exchange there, as far as I know, not on the camp. And then I was transferred and was being taught to become an armourer in the armoury.
What did that involve?
Dealing with guns, rifles, cleaning rifles, guns, also blowing up machines when necessary.
You mean loading the bombs
loading
onto the planes?
Loading the machines, which we'd done quite a few times there while I was at the Navy. And the person my friend there who I used to work with, another airman by the name of Jones. I believe he came from West Brom, Birmingham, somewhere.
And what type of planes were they flying at Hinaidi at the time?
DH-9As.
How much contact did you have at Baghdad and Hinaidi with the local Arab population?
Very little. We only had contact with the people who were actually working on the camp.
What type of jobs were they doing?
Well, they were doing what they used to call the punkawala. Not the punkawala, people who were doing odd jobs, you know, around the camp. Like cleaning all the latrines and all that sort of bit. They used to do that.
How did these servants get on with the airmen?
Well, they seemed to get on all right. I don't remember ever having any trouble at all with anybody that was there. They spoke broken English. Some of them could speak broken English, but most of them, they couldn't speak English at all. We used to just have to learn the odd words, you know, if you wanted something, how to call them and all that sort of business.
You learned the odd word of Arabic, did you? How long did you stay at Hinaidi?
Until I went into hospital. That's where I went into hospital from, was Hinaidi.
Didn't you go on detachment to
Mosul? Oh, yes, I went to detachment, yes. That's what, after I came back from the detachment, that I went into hospital. I was sent on detachment to Mosul.
What did that involve?
Well, we had to go. We travelled by road. We went over the desert in a convoy to Mosul from Baghdad, from Hinaidi to Mosul. Or was it from? I forget now whether it was from Hinaidi or Baghdad. Who went there? No, it must have been Hinaidi because I was in the armoury. It was in Hinaidi, I think. And we went by convoy to Mosul. We were under canvas there for a short time. And then the detachment from 30 Squadron was transferred from Mosul by air to Kirkuk. That was a little aerodrome, Kirkuk, which they arranged for us to go to. I believe the trouble was that they had trouble with the Kurds at the time. That's why we were sent there to Kirkuk.
And did the unit see any action against the Kurds?
Well, as far as I know, we were bombing planes up, loading the planes with bombs, 16 planes sometimes, mostly. We were using 20-pound Cooper bombs and 112-pound heavy stuff. We used to put 8 20-pound Cooper bombs on each wing, and 2 112-pounds under the fuselage. We used to have to detonate all these bombs before we put them on.
To detonate them?
Mm.
How do you mean?
Well, you see, the bombs, when you take them out of the crate, there's no detonators in them at all. So we used to have to unscrew the vanes, put the detonators in, screw them up, and put them on the plane. We'd done the detonator, and we used to lay the bombs underneath each plane. So many for each plane, 16, 20 pounders, 212 was under each plane. And then we used to go along, he'd start one end of the planes, and I'd start the other, and we'd just detonate them as we went along. So we had there was no fear of us missing putting the detonators in. And a very funny thing happened there one day when we were lifting the 112-pound bombs up. We used to have to sit down on your bottom, your legs out, and pick up the nose of the bomb, hands like that, while you were laying down, and lift it up. Well, we were doing one, the second plane we were doing one day, and I was at the nose of the bomb this time, and I went, put my hands on it, and put it on then, and this bomb had been put down in some grease, and it slipped and fell between my legs. And we both got scared, Jones and myself, so we sent for the sergeant to come, told him we'd done this, and the vein was bent, we were afraid it might have gone off. But as we were still alive, we thought, well, it's all right, it must be okay. But he came to take the detonator out again, sergeant did. And that was one experience we had there, but it was the only one that happened. But say accidents do happen. And that was through Greece.
Did the planes come back with much damage on them from these bombing expeditions?
No, sometimes they were fired at because the Kurds used to get up in the hills, you see. And believe me, some of those Kurds could shoot. They used to hit the wires, you know, break them, come back with broken wires. On some occasions, they came back where they've been using their machine guns. Sometimes you have a fault on a machine gun because they were controlled by a reservoir, oil reservoir, and if it lost its pressure, and the pilot would come back with a few holes in the propellers. We had that happen on one occasion, but no damage. We didn't lose any planes through it. But a funny thing happened there one day. Now, this is interesting because it concerned a very, very important pilot. He turned out to be a very important pilot by the name of Kincaid. Did you ever hear of him?
Kincaid? How do you spell it?
K-I-N-K, I think it was H-E-A-D, Kincaid. He was the man that won the, what you call it, trophy in England.
Schneider Trophy?
Schneider Trophy. Flight Lieutenant Kincaid. He was at a Navy with me. And he nearly lost his life there. He crashed, fully loaded with bombs.
Did you see it?
I saw the crash. I didn't see it actually happen, but I saw the plane. Fully loaded with bombs.
Did they go off?
No. And I don't know what they call them things. It was like a big well. Sunk at the end of the aerodrome, and that's where he crashed. He dropped onto this well and just hung there.
Hung over the well?
Yeah.
I think you were going to mention about a friend of yours.
Oh, yes,
the
person I joined up with, Bailey, I forgot to mention it earlier. But actually, we both arrived in Baghdad together, although I hadn't seen him for 12 months previous to that. We were posted to the same squadron in Baghdad when we went overseas. And when I went to Kirkuk, he came with me to Mosul, but from Mosul he was transferred to Kinkabon. How they spell that, I don't know, but Kinkabon it was pronounced. Now, they had some train there by station somewhere, and I believe it was full of ammunition of some description, but anyway, this thing caught fire and blew up. I know my friend lost all his kit there when he got back to Baghdad.
His kit was on the train?
It was on this train. They were sleeping in this train, apparently, in this coach.
You mean it blew up whilst they were sleeping on it?
No, it blew up. Well, they were using the train, you see, but they were away on duty doing something, but the train blew up for some reason. I don't know. He never told me exactly what happened, but I know he lost all his kit there.
And he'd been the chap who joined up with you at Uxbridge?
Joined up with me at Uxbridge. We both worked. Actually, he was my friend. I worked down the coal mine with him together, and we joined up together. And we went all that way before we met again in Baghdad. Now, unfortunately, Mr. Bailey is dead. And he left me for dead when he left Baghdad, because he told my fiancée, my wife was then my fiancée, he called on her, and he told her not to expect me home.
Because you were ill in hospital.
Because I was very ill in hospital. So one never knows. He is dead. I am still here.